Welcome to Behind the Bite, where we delve deep into the real life struggles and triumphs surrounding food, body, and weight. I'm Dr. Christina Castagnini, a psychologist and certified eating disorder specialist, bringing you a unique blend of personal experience as a recovered individual with over 25 years of professional expertise. In each episode, we'll share the courageous journeys of individuals who have faced these challenges firsthand, alongside insights from dedicated professionals in the field. Whether you're seeking healing, inspiration, or simply a deeper understanding, this podcast is here to empower you on your own path to a better life. Join us as we explore stories of resilience, discuss the latest insights, and strive to foster a community of support and growth. Together, we can break down barriers, challenge stigma, and pave the way towards healing and living authentically. Well, hello, everybody. In today's episode, I'm honored to have Heather Sayers-Lehman, who is a TEDx speaker and founder of Overcoming You, Cultivating Employee Well-Being. With her own personal experience, as well as her extensive expertise as a health and wellness coach, Heather is dedicated to helping individuals and organizations build sustainable lifestyle habits and foster emotional resilience. Heather's approach to well-being goes well beyond the surface, and she focuses on mindset and behavioral shifts that are really crucial for creating lasting positive changes. Her work is especially relevant for those of you out there who are struggling with eating disorders and body image issues, as she provides practical strategies to overcome emotional eating and develop a healthier relationship with food and yourself. In this episode, Heather will share insights from her groundbreaking podcast, The Air We Breathe, and her book, Don't Eat It, Deal With It. We'll explore actionable tips for managing emotional eating, cultivating a positive body image, and creating a sustainable path to well-being. So if you've been seeking ways to transform your habits and mindset, you won't want to miss this conversation. So settle in and get ready for a very powerful discussion with Heather Sayers-Lehman on how to overcome your struggles and embrace a more balanced life. All right. Well, Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited too. Like most people I have on the show, I always ask if they're willing to share something about their personal lives because, you know, you and I were talking a little bit before we hit record. There's usually some kind of history or link that led you into the career you're in. So if you're okay with that, would you mind sharing a little bit about your own journey and path?
Yeah, absolutely. I started in undergrad and I was studying to be an athletic trainer. So it was in kinesiology, but I loved because then I could do fitness and all of those pieces included because I had started working out in a gym after I left athletics at like 16. So I was really, and this is, you know, aerobics and shiny Lycra days, like the whole deal. And, you know, within studying that, I became like, you know, really interested as well in behavior. And then I know my sophomore year of college, and of course, the same thing, anybody who becomes disordered, kind of like these different scenarios coming together. And then I just started working out more and not eating enough and not partying with my friends because I, you know, where I was in school, it was a very big party. It was very fun. But then I was like, oh no, can't drink all that beer, you know, watching everything. And this is, you know, low fat era. And, you know, over time started to, I mean, more of like a people saying something to me like, ooh, boy. And I like, oh, these people are so jealous of my weight loss. And really it was actual concern and it was merited. And then there was just a time where my friends wanted to go to Taco Bell. And I was like, I can't eat at Taco Bell. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. And I really lost a lot of behaviors just like that. I was like, okay, now I can't even hang out with my friends. And then pursued what we will call probably disordered, perhaps with some semi-normal tendencies in there. And then when I went to grad school, I was exercise science and I was working in the athletic department as a strength coach. And when it came time to pick my thesis, I really wanted to study eating disorders, which is also frowned upon when you're studying exercise science. They're like, that's not it. And I was like, but I was also working with all these athletes who clearly had a lot of issues. I was working with coaches who were so inappropriate about body talk. And, you know, obviously you would be faster, jump higher if you lost weight. So I was hearing a lot of this. And I was also so curious about my experience in undergrad of like, how did I just kind of decide like, this is too much, and then sort of switched gears. So this is like in the 90s. And I took a lot of the information. I felt very fortunate that I had studied that before I had kids as well. And took a lot of that information with me, and also lived in diet culture and still had some pretty wonky rules about maintaining my body size. And then I was in fitness for a long time, and I moved into health coaching around 2011 because I really loved the full concept, because I tend to be a pretty organized person, and a lot of people that I knew had a lot of trouble kind of keeping all of their habits together. And that was for a lot of reasons, you know, setting too lofty of goals or trying to do too much. And so I really liked helping people with the whole piece of exercising, eating, stress management, sleep, putting that all together. So I really enjoyed doing that. And I ended up in a position where I was a health coach for our county here, 13,000 employees, one of me. And I wrote a book on emotional eating while I was there because I was seeing so many people. And I don't think I would write that book today, but you know, this in 2014, I just saw so many people who were really struggling with their relationship with food, and hated themselves for it. It was kind of the bigger piece that I was pretty consistently surprised about, and how frank people were, because I mean, it's, you know, so socially acceptable to dog on yourself about like, why am I doing this? And I'm so stupid. I should be doing this. And, so I learned so much during that. And I, again, thought I was being pretty helpful because I didn't do scales trying to get people away from that, but, you know, still had some things that I would say aren't helpful to people. And then in 2015, I was diagnosed with thyroid disease. And I absolutely remember the moment. I was just so afraid of getting really, really sick. My mother has a lot of health conditions, a lot of autoimmune problems, and always watching her. And I was seeing a lot of doctors who I didn't find helpful. They were either dismissive or, well, we'll just stick with dismissive, I would say, for the most part. And still at this time, I'm in kind of a straight size body. And then I, you know, started gaining weight, and then my healthcare, of course, got worse because they're like, well, obviously you just lost weight. And I'm like, I'm just telling you something is amiss here. So I started following more kind of like the woo-woo stuff and started on my own path of, well, I'll cut this food group out. I'll cut this food group out, and restricting more and more because like, these are the quote unquote protocols. I would say like an autoimmune protocol is when I vividly remember like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I think this is probably pretty dangerous for me, but I was so afraid of, getting sicker that I thought it was worth it at the time. And plot twist, it was not worth it at the time. So I ended up developing orthorexia because at a certain point, because of my fear of being sick, and I was convincing myself that these things were the cures, quote unquote, that everybody else was saying they were, that I certainly couldn't add anything back. And so I felt my life get a lot smaller. It's easier to eat at home by myself. You know, meet at happy hour. Like, I don't know, do I have time to research the restaurant and look at the menu, or am I just going to have to eat before, you know, like really, certainly socially restricted, but also travel wise, well, now I've got to pack this and pack that and, you know, make sure I've got foods that I can eat. And, started to really feel kind of the squeeze. And then at the time also I met my then husband, who had a healthier relationship with food. And I was like, how am I supposed to like live with this guy? Like he eats rice. It's like, oh boy. So I just started asking myself a lot more questions about what I was doing. Is this working? Because like the biggest piece, it didn't work. Actually, I felt so much better when I got away from the naturopathic, a zillion expensive supplements and all of that. And I actually switched. I found a doctor that switched my, at the time, this was instead of taking generic levothyroxine, I took Synthroid. I felt 100% better. I was like, wait, what? Like this is available to me the entire time, but you know, I'm spending so much money on this other stuff. And so started asking a lot more questions about why I was doing what I was doing, and found a really good eating disorder therapist. And she really helped me walk out of all of that fear and rigidity into a place where, you know, this spring I've had to travel a lot for different reasons, and it's been a breeze. It has been so delightful. I just went to Boston with my daughter, and she is looking to move there in a year, and like no thought of like, I don't know, babe, where do you want to go? Okay. She picked, we're going there. I look up at the menu. I order something. I sit at a table. I eat it, and then I'm done and move on with my life. And I'm so grateful for that recovery. I'm grateful for certainly the professional that I worked with. But you know, my own presence of mind to start asking a lot of questions about this narrowing of the lens and the kind of the closing in on my life, that this is not enjoyable. This is not, it's not even rewarding. Like I'm not, I don't feel better. That's a big thing if I felt better. So that my recovery has really informed a lot of my work. I went back through, had to edit the heck out of my book and re-released it because it was certainly problematic. And I went through all of the courses. I work in corporate wellness and made everything weight inclusive and started educating on the harms of dieting and how you can focus on health without focusing on weight or your size or your shape. And, you know, really did a bit of an apology tour. Sorry, I told you to count your almonds, like all of those pieces, and have started speaking on a higher level, talking about these things, because again, in corporate wellness, I have never once seen eating disorders as a topic at any of the events I either go to or speak at. And so I'm finally the one that's talking about it, and talk about like people coming to talk to you afterwards of like, oh my gosh, you know what? And it's like, yeah, we all work in health and wellness, so we're all a little like off anyway. So why are we perpetuating this for an entire industry when we know we have problems and we're just making problems worse for other people? So it's felt really good to be a lot more aligned with values that are much more respectful and inclusive of other people and their journeys and their mental health.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. And, you know, as I was listening to you, as something that kept popping through my mind was like, oh my gosh, you were just so much trying to control what I would imagine is this fear, right? You get this diagnosis and I bet there's people listening going, well, yeah, like if I got a diagnosis, or maybe people who have a diagnosis of something they're scared of, they're looking for a treatment or a solution or some way to make, you know, their lives better or avoid the worst outcomes. And I'm curious for you, when you said like all of these people were saying to eat this certain way or not eat these things, like, was this like Dr. Google saying this? Was this like, who were these people? Because I know a lot of my patients will go straight to the internet and they'll read all these things and get super confused, or they'll talk to somebody maybe who also has the same diagnosis that, well, we all eat whatever this way, or we, you know, you have to avoid these kinds of foods. And so all of a sudden they're just grasping at straws, like trying to find, again, some kind of rules, which, as we know, eating disorders are very rule-based. And it can get down to that slippery slope of orthorexia, much like you ended up in. So I'm just actually curious where that all came from for you.
Much of it was the internet. Okay. I will say I chose a quote unquote balancing hormone naturopath or no, wait, sorry, hormone balancing naturopath, which, as we know, that's your ding, 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 red flag. I don't see this person. And she certainly, in hindsight, was very disordered about food. And so she certainly encouraged me to give up more and more. And kudos, you're doing like a great job now by this supplement. Let's do this test. And I don't even think that actually she would have fancied herself as somebody who's just doing money grab. I believe she believed all of it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the internet, just, you know, these five things are helpful for, you know, because I had my thyroid out, I had to have it removed. So these things are helpful for thyroid recovery, because also a piece that happens that not one single endocrinologist told me or my surgeon is that generally there is, I don't want to use the term substantial, most people gain weight after this surgery, and nobody told me this. And I was also held responsible for this, like, you know, the tisk tisk and, you know, all of these things from the medical crowd. And so I think it really drove me deeper into the internet and all of the danger signs of misinformation, reading an article and be like, no, I don't like that. Like, I like this, like, you know, like a Dr. Hyman or somebody like that. I'm like, oh my gosh, he just said it's these five things. Well, isn't that simple? And he works at the Cleveland Clinic. And it's like, yeah, he can still be full of it. But I didn't look at it that way at all. So, you know, it was a real combination, but I definitely followed some very problematic people, you know, because I find them on the internet and like, oh my gosh, this is great. Now I can find you, you know, on Instagram or Facebook, and then I can listen to you all of the time. So you can reinforce all of this for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, like somebody listening might be like, wait, I go to like somebody that is a naturopath or, you know, somebody who does alternative healing or medicine or wellness. How do you know when you said ding, 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 you know, like that's a red flag. Like somebody say, well, this person really helps me, or they're providing the care that, like, you know, Western medicine doctors don't, because certainly Western medicine doctors can be turning people off with their emphasis on weight loss and the scale and the BMI. I totally get that. That can be harmful as well. So how can somebody know, like, this person isn't the real deal, or they may be giving me something to do or take things that are expensive and sending me down the rabbit hole, and it's not going to be helpful?
It's so challenging, because, like, I have a naturopath now who handles my menopause symptoms. And when I was looking for somebody to help with that, I was looking for an evidence-based practice. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little bit different because when I was in graduate school, we studied research. What is real research? What is fake research? What matters? What gives the illusion? How research can be misinterpreted? So what we see in the media is really mm-hmm. not what that research may even say. So I'm kind of lucky to have that background, but I started following. So the Dr. Lee Lewis is my naturopath now. And on Instagram, she will post articles all the time. Here is where this comes from. Or the North American Menopause Society has a new statement on this. And so I looked at her not just always saying, like, a study said, because I think that, especially with a lot of the, I hear it a lot kind of in the bro influencer market of like, oh, there was a study and, you know, this happened. And it's like, how many people were in that study? So I just started looking for people who talked about evidence and that who could share, you know, a PubMed ID of like where I could look it up or somebody could look it up. And also people talking about kind of the lure of the quick fix and like that really doesn't happen. Because if somebody is saying like, oh my gosh, I can fix this, it's like, also, you don't know me. Like the fact that my mom has a zillion autoimmune issues probably means that I'm pretty likely to have a lot of autoimmune issues. So I can't diet my way out of my genetics as well. But I think really just following people who were willing to put, because what a pain that is to actually put out, like, here's the, you know, here's this reference. And it takes a lot of extra time. And I also, you know, I'm a person that believes in vaccines as well. And then my doctor, I know at the time when we met, she was volunteering for the county to help do COVID vaccinations. And I was like, okay, like, and that's just my own personal values. Some people don't believe that, but I just wanted somebody who was like, here's what, you know, evidence says, and then this is what I will do. And also follows organizations that, you know, are actually practicing. Because when somebody is like, you know, the American Psychological Association has it all wrong, I'm like, ooh. I mean, there's some bad takes within any organization, but when people really want to rebuff everything, then I find that to be a bit of a red flag as well. So I'm also looking for the research, but listening for the red flags of how easy it is. It's only this many steps, and heavy on the personal responsibility. You can change anything. You can fix anything, because that's absolutely not true. And when people lean into that, then I absolutely lean out of their messaging.
Mm-hmm. Good points. Thank you. Because I think it is confusing. There is so much, I mean, you know, you were talking about being back in the 90s, and, you know, I was back in those days too. It was kind of refreshing a little bit, because there was all this noise with the internet and influencers and contradictory messaging. And I mean, it's hard now. And people listen to, you know, the algorithms kind of, once you look at one thing, you keep getting more information that confirms all of that. So you can get into a real tunnel.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And it's also as it is intended. That is the way that all systems are working as they should. And I think, you know, I'm not on Facebook. I came back to Instagram when I launched my podcast last year, mm-hmm. and I wasn't stoked about it. But it's definitely easy, because there are things that absolutely I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a before and after picture, like block, or like, I'm not interested in that. Cause I know the things I don't want to see. But it is, again, it's like, it's also predatory as well. And, you know, I just hate that kind of slippery, gross feeling. And especially then when the algorithm is like, oh my gosh, there's an author who, in my opinion, kind of went off the deep end, and it's incredibly problematic. And I didn't realize that because I hadn't really followed her. And then I looked her up, and then my whole Instagram, it was like the turning of a kaleidoscope. But I was like, oh, no. I was just looking because I don't like her. Please do not serve me up all of her friends, because it absolutely did. And it took a while to be like, oh, no, not interested. Mm-hmm. And it is. I think it's just nearly impossible for a lot of people to know what is beneficial for them. And that's why one of my bigger pieces is like, stop reading. Like, because again, like, to what end? Like, is there a menopause secret that just nobody has turned over, but, you know, next Tuesday, somebody will have discovered, like, the way to ease all of your menopause symptoms? Like, probably not. And I think that, kind of that, as you talked before, that quest for control and reading so much, too much, certainly doesn't have a big upside to it. And reading less, I think, is a lot more peaceful.
Absolutely. And I think it kind of goes hand in hand with the eating disorder stuff, like wanting to find like the holy grail of like reaching whatever goal that is. And certainly you talked about your own experience with that, but I'm curious too, like, what is this fear of like not having the rules or having the guidelines or having like the five things or whatever it is, like, because, you know, as you and I were talking before, you know, we started the recording here, it's the fear of letting go of the eating disorder behaviors, the rules, the rituals. And it's like this, a lot of times my patients will call it like the free falling. I feel like I'm jumping off a cliff and I have no idea what to eat, what to do, how to live my daily life. It's like this huge amount of anxiety, almost panic, right? Like, so now what do I do? And it's almost like they hear, oh, you're telling me to do the exact opposite, like go completely out of control. And you're telling me to like be completely unhealthy. Is this like the eating disorder behaviors were keeping them quote unquote healthy and in line and right? And so it's like, oh, wait, you're telling me to just, you know, eat everything and binge and have all these things and be completely unhealthy. And how's, you know, why is that a good thing? And it's interesting people hear that or think that's the solution or whatever it is. I'm curious what your thoughts on are on that.
Well, I think, you know, we sure love polarity. And I think our brains really like things to be. And is it going in this bucket or that bucket? Because I don't have the emotional bandwidth to create more buckets. It's either good or it's bad.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's easy. And the rules, I think it really stems certainly, you know, and I grew up in a pretty chaotic environment. My mom was an addict and an alcoholic and, you know, all of the things that go with that. And so I found rules very early because my brother didn't adhere to any rules and things did not work out well for him. So I was like, oh, okay. I don't really want to get hit by a brush. So I'm going to be really good, you know, be very compliant, get good grades. Appearance was highly valued by my mom. So make sure I'm looking cute and looking good. And I followed a lot of rules to stay off the radar. And also that's what you get praised for, like being in, you know, doing well in the spelling bee, like, oh my gosh, look at you. You know, you get accolades, you get attention, and it's all positive attention. So it's so easy, I think, especially in our culture. And I certainly, you know, my only experience is growing up as a woman, found that as a woman, it was an easier way to keep moving forward by achieving. I just did an episode with two of my friends from high school, and we were talking about being exceptional and what a trap that is. Mm-hmm. But like when you are exceptional, when you're younger, or you're growing up or professionally, you know, you get a lot of like fawning and good for you. And certainly, you know, my mom wouldn't be mad about that. So there is so much reinforcement to following rules, being good. And I think many times as we grow up, we don't see that as rules. But, you know, I needed in my own mind to have a certain GPA. Well, then that would be a rule. I have to get that. But, you know, I think people see them as, you know, maybe it's a should or that's an expectation. And I just always try to bring it back to like, it's also a rule. Mm-hmm. And having people, you know, examine a little bit closer of like, oh my gosh, because at what point from childhood to adulthood would I have shifted gears away from following rules? Like, because then I went to college and, you know, I also wanted to do well and be recognized. And those things also paid off for me. So I think that it's so easy to confuse the safety and security of following rules with a way of life that's compatible with joy and freedom and self-expression, because usually like those two don't coincide. Because when I was a big rule follower, certainly when I was younger, I just wanted to have what everybody else had. I wanted to look exactly like what everybody else looked like. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in this club, I want to be in this club. Like there was zero originality in it. It just, you know, that looks good. And I think the hard thing about getting away from rules are there are a lot of decisions. And I think that certainly most people I know or just not swimming in emotional bandwidth in a daily basis. You know, they might be working and parenting and also worried about their parents and worried about finances, like all of these pieces. So for me to like flim flam around about like what's for lunch, like, ugh, it feels like too much. And I really, when I'm working with clients, we try to certainly short circuit that thinking that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be too much, but I understand, you know, with that, the polarity that we all love of like rules or no rules. And because one of my big pieces is always like, there's a whole lot of gray between rules and no rules. And I know certainly for, when I stepped into an intuitive eating, I ate all the things, especially it was also the pandemic. So then my husband is there and he's like just baking all day. And I was like, you know what would be good? And it took a while for me to swing the pendulum to be like, okay, now I really have bad GERD. I was one of the, I think about 30% of women in menopause will develop GERD. And so then I developed that and I was like, okay, so now this isn't fun. Mm-hmm. I'm not enjoying this. And really, I hate the terms like moderate or, but I moderated. And it, that's, I think, also a hard part because I feel like sometimes in like anti-diet and intuitive eating, it has its own rules of like, oh, you can't say moderation or you can't say, and it's like, I don't know what else to say, but eating a lot of different things didn't agree with me. And so I had to more go through process and really kind of like respect all of the tenets of intuitive eating as well. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough to become an intuitive eating counselor and learn more. You know, Elise Rush was teaching at that and learn more to find so much more nuance within the process because, you know, there are things like I work out early in the morning now and I don't do hard cardio because it gives me GERD. And that's not a food issue. That's just like a me issue. And those types of the things apply throughout my day as well of like, what's going to make me feel good. And, you know, certain things at lunch, that's a no-go because it makes me really tired. And I work by myself in this office and I could take a nap. I would rather not, but, you know, I have to listen to my body. And that's something that I never learned to do. So within the rule piece, it's like, oh my gosh, so like I'm in charge, like you want me to be in charge, but also figuring out a way where it doesn't feel like, you know, this extra mental load, it can also feel like an opportunity to find something that's going to work for me because the top five things might not take into consideration, you know, my family structure, my budget, my bandwidth, my health conditions. So really being able to focus on like, okay, so for you, for today, like, you know, with dinner, considering what you had for lunch, like what feels good. And I think that that was really helpful to kind of look at it as almost like an honoring or being respectful to my body because I've been through so much and finding some self-kindness didn't look like restriction anymore. It looked a lot more like nourishment and finding fun and, you know, making things that are enjoyable. And I think kind of I always talk about turning the kaleidoscope with my clients of not this like massive 180, but what does a 20 degree turn look like? What if we just do a little bit and kind of ease into it versus, and I think for some people, myself, maybe that big pendulum swing was necessary. But I was very happy to come back and find something more in the middle that worked better for me long-term.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to put it, kind of like thinking about food in a way that, you know, you can, the way you tied it with like being perfect and doing the right things and all of that. And that's really what the rules are about, right? It's how do you let go of that without also personalizing, saying I'm doing the wrong things, I'm being bad, I'm failing, I'm right? Because if there is a lot of noise out there, like and negative connotations. I constantly hear people making comments like, oh, they let themselves go. They're lazy. Mm-hmm. They're not trying hard enough, right? Like they need to get back on track. All these terms, I think, that are out there kind of still perpetuating this belief. Like if you're not following some kind of rules or plans, like you're doing all those other things, right? It can feel, I think it's harsh.
Yeah. And I think kind of depending on, you know, what culture, what people you're around, it's louder in some groups and quieter in other groups. Mm-hmm. Because like my family, like, you know, I'm from a small town in Indiana. And when I was younger studying fitness, like I was like the snobby hoity toity one who's like interested in health. But then like there are people at my gym now, occasionally will go and get coffee. And I was the only one to ever eat anything. They were like, oh, well, like on the birthdays, like somebody will get a treat. And I'm like, I'm not hungry. I just worked out. And I was always the only person. And just depending on where we were, you know, I might get like a muffin. And they were like, oh, so then does that mean you have like a salad for lunch? I'm like, well, my lunch is leftovers from dinner. So whatever that was, but no, there isn't a compensatory. And so I'm in community with people all the time that 100%, I'm sure they look down their nose on me, which is fine because I feel like the rules are, you know, the question when you have a rule is like, according to whom? Like, do I think these like ding dongs at my gym, like have everything solved and by avoiding muffins, like they're much happier people? Like, no, I know them well enough to know, like, that's definitely not true. And the according to whom piece, because, you know, I'm my best authority on me. And I think, you know, some of this comes with being over 50 and just being tired of it and leaning into Layla, you know what, I just don't even care anymore. But I think I know that that is challenging. I feel much more comfortable like in my gym, like when there's stuff like, cause again, like the hard cardio and I'm like, I'm walking on the treadmill and I'm always the only one. I couldn't care less. And that's easier for me too, because like I'm a certified personal trainer. I've been in that field for 30 years. Because I don't perceive our trainer who is a 24-year-old dude knows more about me than I do. And so I think, you know, trying to help people adopt the according to whom, and is this an opinion I should value? Because there are a handful of opinions in my life that I value, and the rest, like, you're not my tree of trust. So no, like, it's not important. And I think that certainly as a school of thought, it's very counterintuitive, because we are certainly, you know, born and bred to look to other people for what I should be doing, which I think that kind of idolatry piece is what gets us in so much trouble, because with a diet, well, like, who is doing this? And like, okay, like, what are, you know, who wrote the book? And, you know, all of these different things that I need to find somebody who knows. And it's like, well, plot twist, like, there are a lot of people that don't know. There are a lot of idiots with huge followings. Like, these are not all bright people. They're not following evidence. They're just making a lot of money, or they look really good in their workout clothes. They have the ideal body. And so I was just looking at something where I couldn't like Jillian Michaels less. And she said something stupid today. I saw it on social media, but then like her picture is like her, like just in a sports bra with her abs. And I'm like, this does not qualify her to know like what's going to work best for your life. This qualifies her to have abs. And does her whole family have abs? I don't know. I don't care. Like, is this genetic, or has she just been restricting forever? It doesn't matter. But starting to really ask questions about according to whom, certainly I think benefits a lot. You know, I was a single parent growing up, and I didn't particularly ask for a lot of advice on parenting, because I felt like I was doing a good enough job. And luckily my kids are 21, 23, still intact. And I didn't value what somebody who was really active in the PTA over like what I was doing, which was a single parent working a lot. And I think that asking more questions about why these people are in a position in your own mind that they are superior to you. And even if they are a doctor, like, I know enough doctors now that it's like, oh, I don't know. that makes them superior. It makes them dedicated, and they went to a lot of school and they learned a lot, but it doesn't necessarily mean in this venue that they know more than I do.
Mm-hmm. And that's certainly the case for eating disorders. I would 100% say that for sure. If anyone's listened to any of my podcasts like before, you know, they don't get any education in eating disorders in med school, which is quite unfortunate. I don't understand that, or nutrition for that matter, right? So,
yeah, it really is. I mean, I think that piece is so wild because I feel like the AMA said that there's like around 25 hours is what a physician would finish school, 25, not like credit hours, 25 hours of nutrition period. And I hear a lot of, have heard over the years, a lot of physicians just echoing diet culture and talking about what it, you know, because being in the field for 30 years, you know, of course it used to be low fat. And then, you know, we had to, now it might be keto or something or fasting. And it's like, you know, they're just parroting what they read in Men's Health. It's not even like based on anything fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, you and I could have a whole nother podcast on just that topic. Yeah. Podcast for another day. But I think too, like that people looking to people in authority for rules for what to do right and wrong, mm-hmm. or the way, the path to health. Because again, much like what you experienced, the fear of doing something wrong and having a negative outcome, whether it be poor health, not treating your illness correctly, the body being out of control, getting, you know, negative comments, shame, like all of it. It's just, I can see why it's hard. And anyone listening, like, you know, I empathize with you. I've been down that path myself. Like, mm-hmm. you want so much to be doing the right things, and you just want somebody to tell you what those things are. And to your point, everybody's body is so different. Like, nobody's going to be able to tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the hard part, and especially with illnesses that might be a little more nebulous, and you know, certainly autoimmune falls within that there might not be a good answer. They might not know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is frustrating in the field, because then people like throw out stuff of like, well, what if you, and it's like, you maybe take all the time and trouble to do this and you're not even sure if it's beneficial. So that feeling and back to control of like, I'm doing something, so now I feel better. Whereas I feel like there are some really basic tenets of health and moving your body and eating foods that are nutritious and fill you up and are satisfying, as well as, you know, a lot of other foods, you know, not just solely focused on that, which it's so funny now because I feel like I can't say like nutritious without like, well, let me give you six caveats. Hold on. you know, like having just some really basic tenets. And I think that when like I'm working with people and we start breaking it down to those things, it feels more doable because like I enjoy Rachel Hartley's book, Gentle Nutrition. And I recommend that. I talk about it in one of my planning, shopping, and cooking courses. And sometimes, you know, with clients, because she's got like 10 tenets of gentle nutrition. And it's like fruits and vegetables, whole grains, you know, like minimize sweets. And, you know, it's nothing crazy. And you also don't have to treat gentle nutrition as a Bible, but it is a bit of a framework if you're looking, you know, to have more volume, because my best friend and I were just talking about big salads where you're kind of like eating until you're just tired of eating. Like the salad never ends because I inadvertently made way too much of this very complicated salad this weekend and regretted it from the food processor to the dishwasher. But it seemed like a good idea. But, you know, just of trying to, like, you know, add vegetables, or where can I move, or what could I do that would improve my sleep, or what can I say no to so I'm not so stressed out, that it doesn't have to be a complicated script. Because, again, like, certainly in parenting, my life looked different, you know, maybe during basketball season than it did. The kids were out of school in the summer, so I have to adjust accordingly. And I think a rule-based lifestyle doesn't let you do that, because now you at least need to feel bad all summer that you're not working out as much, which I'm in Phoenix. It's 107 today. Like, it's not even really summer yet. But, you know, the rules, you know, creating that compliance, with which compliance comes guilt and shame. And I need to feel bad about this. And it's like, sounds like you're doing the best you can with the situation you're in right now. And what if that could be good enough? Or what if you actually gave yourself applause for, like, you know what, I'm figuring this out. I'm, you know, I'm going light until, you know, we hit the 100-degree mark, and then I'll go back to walking early in the morning or whatever. But finding things that, you know, actually work for you. And again, I think there's a lot of exploration, and I talk about that certainly a lot, of, you know, creating self-awareness, creating adaptability, you know, working on critical thinking, like all of those skills, I feel like are very, I call those the meta skills that I'm always kind of working with my clients about, just to be able to formulate something that works for you, and also to have the confidence to back that up, that I am doing the right thing for me.
Mm-hmm. No, it does get complicated, because we're all complex beings, right? There's not a cookie cutter solution for everybody. That's why I get so mad at these, like, programs, right? It's like, everybody do the same thing, eat the same things, like, same time in the same amounts. It's like, huh? What? Like, stop it.
Exactly. Here's the serving size. Okay, well, what if I'm 6'7" and then what if he's 4'10"? Is that still the same serving size? Like, so the points don't matter. I mean, it's, I mean, it really, like, I think the farther you get away from it, it's all so ludicrous. And when you start looking at the arbitrary nature, you know, of a serving size, like, who decided that? I don't know, somebody in marketing at Kellogg's, like, it's like nobody that's necessarily qualified, or even, you know, looking at, sort of, you know, we are still so heavy in kind of clean eating and all of that. And, again, there's, like, also, like, so much nonsense in that. Did you know, like, this is also in batteries? And it's like, oh, dude, come on. Like, there's just so many pieces that once you start looking at it a little more critically, that you're like, that doesn't, I mean, yes, I understand, like, that has salt. I'm not, like, mainlining salt, or with salt from this ocean or that ocean. And there's just, like, so much that you're just like, no, you just really have to tune out to, like, okay, like, is there sort of a moderation of my salt that I could do that doesn't require a calculator, or making sure I'm going to Whole Foods to get this particular salt that today is good, but tomorrow it will be bad because we have to have something in a capitalistic society to replace it to market now.
That's the truth, right? I still love how awesome and how horrible and evil eggs, like, have come and gone, right? Just that alone.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the piece, I think, that's easier just of being around for so long, to watch things come and go. Because in college, like, you know, if you, when I was in college, you know, in the early 90s, like, if you ate butter, like, you literally would have to go straight to jail. Somebody's calling the police because that's unacceptable. Like, fat-free cream cheese, perhaps. But then, you know, then obviously that has to flip flop. And then we're putting butter on steaks. And I literally saw somebody making fun of somebody online that she eats like half a stick of butter, like, with her meal. And I was like, oh, I hope your arteries are well. But again, like this pendulum, it's just going to swing. It has to swing. Mm-hmm. And because again, we can't, we've got as far as we can go with snack wells. So now we've got to like find something that's more butter laden to sell. It's got to go like back and forth, but that's profit.
It's funny. Like I mentioned snack wells the other day to my daughter. She's like, what's that? And, like when I was her age, that was like the thing, right? Everybody bought snack wells for everything. And it's like, yeah, they have no concept. And it's, yeah, I sit back and I do watch. I'm like, what's the next thing with the 15 minutes of fame, right? Just, mm-hmm. It's coming. It's, it is always so ludicrous to me. I'm like, what, why?
Yeah. And it's so challenging. I mean, you know, in my recovery apology tour, I had to talk to my kids a lot about, you know, I did this, I thought this was healthy. Turns out it wasn't. And this is disordered. And this behavior is disordered. And because I grew up around me at least being vigilant about my weight. And then they also then were in this, they grew up all foods fit. Donuts, Pop-Tarts, like whatever, and salmon and broccoli. So I felt really thankful that I had had some education on eating disorders before I had them. But, you know, really explaining to them kind of like, here's what happened, but, you know, pulling back the curtain on the industry and the silliness of it all so that they're educated consumers as well, because there's, especially then socially, you know, they're influenced by a lot of different things too. So I always think, you know, talking to them about, which like snack wells is a great example of like, oh yeah, we lost our minds over this. Like this was a thing. Whereas like now you guys are just chewing on tree bark with dipping it in almond butter because that's like natural. And that seems like fantastic.
Yeah, I think you and I can relate on lots of things over the years. Appreciate everything you've shared. And, you know, kudos to you for going into the corporate world too. I know that's got to be very interesting. And I know I think I told you I tried it once and all I got was looks like I had 10 heads and, you know, everyone just wanted to know about weight loss and how much to exercise. So I really hand it to you. Like that's a hard nut to crack. So keep doing all the good work you're doing as well. And now you have some books you mentioned. So would you mind mentioning those? And also if people do want to reach out to you, follow you, how can they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn the most. And it's just Heather Sarahs Lehman, both of them. And, you know, I try to share my podcast there as well, which is The Air We Breathe, finding a well-being that works for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, The Air We Breathe is like, because all of this is the air we mm-hmm. breathe. Like we're so indoctrinated into diet culture. So I really try to bring more things to the light in the podcast. So that's Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And I do have my website, which shocker, it's heathersarahslehman.com. And I have a couple of things that I think are helpful in this process of breaking from the rules. And if you go to heathersarahslehman.com/meta-skills, I have a download talking about those pieces of adaptability, creative, critical thinking, and self-awareness. So people can start asking more questions. And then I also have a /journal that teaches you how to write like with those questions, because again, if you want me to be in charge of my decisions, I have to get to know myself better. And I always feel like journaling is a great way to start trying to figure myself. It's like introducing me to me, like, what do you want? Like, oh, I guess. So those are the best ways to find me.
Great. Thank you so very much. Very enlightening. And I hope people out there do reach out to you and do listen to your podcast. You have a lot of great information to share. So thank you so very much.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening today. Behind the Bite podcast is created by me, Dr. Christina Castanini, as part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network and produced by the Tweaky Tales. I love hearing from my listeners. So if you like the show, please like, rate, and subscribe to it on whatever platform you're on. And for anyone who wants to understand their relationship with food better, or who might be wondering if they have an eating disorder, I have a free 9-week e-course at my website. Just go to www.behindthebitepodcast.com to get your free e-course today. Please note, this podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, clinical, or other professional information. If you want or need a professional, you should find one to work with who can address your individual needs and situation. Thank you.